Hello world, this is Dr. Kulmeet Kunlis and welcome to our live session on hair loss. As you know, every week we conduct survey and whatever our patient wants, we create this live session so that we could explain and understand together the common medical problems so that we could come up with practical solutions. And this week, overwhelming patients wanted to know or understand about hair loss. So this is our presentation to help you understand what hair loss is, why it happened, what is a normal pattern of hair loss, what is abnormal pattern of hair loss, what are the treatment options which are available, and what we all can do together to improve our quality of life so that we could maintain our self-esteem and continue to have a productive life. Hair loss. You know, like there are certain triggers which we have which promotes or create excessive amount of emotional reaction, and hair loss is one of them. Because if hair loss anybody who experiences, they have a significant emotional quotient. And higher the thing which is bothers us emotionally, more important it becomes for us. Hair loss is a multi-billion industry, not only in the United States, but worldwide. And we peg our ego on hair, how we look. And so it's become a very important part of the issue because we value it. It is important for us and we try to continue to improve and do the things the way we need to do that part. Hair loss has a lot of myths, wrong information on the internet. And the goal will be to stay scientific, explain you the where the evidence lies, and what are the evidence-based medications which are available for currently for treatment, what are the futuristic things people are trying, and also looking at the things which we could change as our lifestyle, which will help. Let's divide this talk into, first we understand the normal hair. Then we understand the natural pattern of hair distribution. Then what promotes hair growth. Then we go into what are the abnormalities happen over the period of time. And then in the end, what more we could do to improve that part. Let's pick one hair and let's look at the whole anatomy and physiology of one hair. The hair which you see, whether it's at your scalp, your beard, your eyebrow, your armpit, or your pubic hair, or anywhere in this thing, one hair, what you're seeing on the skin, that is called shaft of the hair. Then, this hair has to pass through the skin, and then it goes into a small flask, like the way, remember where we store, they have the flowers and we have the flask that we put the flower in, exactly same like the flask like structure which happens over there. That is the one which we call bulb. When the cell goes in the flask, it gets attached to hair follicle. So we have a hair follicle, from there the stalk is coming, then it's coming out in there, which we call root. Then it comes out of the skin, which is shaft. And then underneath that follicle, at the bottom of the flask, there is a stem cell, there are blood vessels, there are sebaceous glands, and there are melanocytes, the cells which give the black color or the other pigmentation color, depending on the consistency or the density of these pigments. That is the one that gives the color to this our hair. So if you look at it here, we have to look through the shaft, which we look outside the skin, then it penetrates into the skin, and then it has a root, Then it has a follicle, underneath is the stem cell, blood vessels, and then it's enclosed in a flask-like structure, which is follicle. And there opens the sebaceous glands. Also, there are melanocytes, which are the nerve cells, the modified nerve cells. So if there is a problem, so you need to, now let's go over how the hair normally grows. If you look, let's pick up the most obvious hair, which we all care about, is our scalp hair. When the scalp hairs, which you have, each hair has a life of between 2 to 8 years or 2 to 7 years. When the hair starts from the stem cell in the bulb, on the follicle, then it roots, then it pushes out, and then this cell in the bottom keep on producing more and more of hair size. So it can continue to grow 2 to 7 years. That's why people have a long scalp hair. The ladies have long hair. And then this growth, which happened 2 to 7 years, we call it's a special name given to this one. Is, we'll go over that the detail in a second. But that is the one which is the when the cell is growing. Then cell enters a second phase where the cell stops growing, and then it gets detached from the hair follicle, stem cell, blood vessel, and melanocyte. That is the catabolic state, or the state where it is not connected to the stem cell, it's not connected to the hair follicle. Then the third stage comes into is this part, which we call is that the hair falls off. Normally, day-to-day basis, we lose about 50 to 100 cells. And that is a very important part. We need to understand that part, that how this thing works. Because if we don't understand how our hair are growing, we will get into a trouble. Then when the hair falls off, then it goes to a period of rest. And then that's where this most of the problems happens. Then this resting phase has to again start into the growth phase. So it's a hair we need to understand. It's a very active process. First is that from the hair, from the stem cell. If you want to see the magic of stem cell, we all talk about stem cells, different kind of bone stem cells, so hair follicle stem cell. But hair is the only place where we could see these hair stem cells in action. When the cell is growing, keep on producing the hair. That is called growth phase, called anagen. Then when it stops growing, and then it's get disconnected from the hair follicle, then hair enters into catagen, or the transitional phase. Then in the last phase is when the hair is goes into resting phase. So the resting phase, these phases could change from different kind of cells. Say for example, our scalp hairs, which we talked about, they could keep on growing 2 to 7 years. Then it will add into transitional or catagen. Then last, it will go into resting phase, which is called telogen. And then it will be shredded off, which is called exogen. So if all our hair stay in 2 to 7 years of growth phase, we will be full of hair all over the place, and that will not be conducive to our life. So what happens is, like eyebrows, our eyelids, our armpit hairs, or our pubic hair, they usually, their growth period is about 2 to 3 months. After 2 to 3 months, they enter into transitional phase, then resting phase, and then they are shredded out. So that's why you don't get too long pubic hair, too long armpit hair, too long eyebrows, or too long this eyelid, the eyelashes. So nature has pretty much controlled all of them in a significant way, the growth with this thing is. So there is a cycle. It is a simple harmony. this first is in the gross stem cells start growing, then it keep on growing based on where we are. They call anagen or growth phase, then transition phase, and then resting phase, and then the shredding phase. These are very important to understand, because what we're going to discuss further down the line, we need to understand how this part. Now, the next question which we have is, at what speed the hair grows? Nor is usually each hair grows, whether it's your scalp, eyebrows, eyelashes, armpit, or your pubic hair. They pretty much grow about 1/2 inch per month, which is about 1.2 centimeters. So that's why your hair in your scalp can grow up to 6 inches per month or 15 centimeters. And because they have a long life to, they keep on growing 2 to 7 years. That's why the eyelashes, other hair, they fall off, they are shredded quickly. So they don't go too far, they don't get too long. So you could say if the average growth period is about 3 months for these hair, then 3 multiplied by 0.5 is you could expect about 3 inches, but this of hair growth, and then they fall, and that circle keeps on going over and over. The reason I wanted to bring this issue was why this thing is important, that we know how to at what growth or what rate this hair grow. Knowing that it's about 1/2 inch per month gives us an idea when we do the treatment. In the treatment, don't expect a miracle. It's going to grow 1/2 inch per month, and it's going to take time to reach where you want to do this part of it. So it's a very wait and watch game, and most of the errors which happen in all kind of treatments which we will discuss is because we don't understand the concept at what rate our hair are going to grow. Say, for example, I had a patient who was very affluent. He went to Miami and got the hair follicle done, the hair transplant done, and he was expecting that within 2 months, his whole scalp is going to be filled with the healthy-looking stem cells, healthy-looking hair. And I think that was a fallacy. That was expectation problem. So let's move further. So far, we kind of recapitulating, we saying that just imagine hair is sitting in a base that's called follicle, then it has a stem cell, blood vessels, and then nutrition coming to it to nurture, to grow. And then it goes to the part which is in the skin, under the skin we call root, and then what comes out is the shaft. With this background, let's now understand how the hormones affect what this one is. Because hormone-wise, the way your scalp hair grows, the hormone stimuli, which is the most important, which we are going to talk about, DHT or dihydrotestosterone, that acts differently on your scalp hair and also act differently on your eyebrows, eyelashes, pubic hair, and armpit, because that differentiation needs to be understood very clearly. The reason we don't care about any other hair unless it's eyebrow or eyelashes is because those are on the covered parts of the body, and usually that we do not peg our emotions, we do not peg our identity or how we look, whatever we want to call it, and it doesn't provoke that kind of a major emotional reaction to that part of it. Is in case of scalp, this thing is here, dihydrotestosterone, that is the one which stops the growth phase of hair cycle hair in on our scalp, whereas everywhere else it increases the hair. So the hair, whether it's a pubic or armpit or any other hair, that's where this thing is kind of promotes hair growth. But in case of scalp, it is a kind of, it stops the, it slow, it decreases the growth of those hormones, growth phase of your scalp hair. That differentiation needs to be very important, because in treatment, when we use all the medications, all the treatment for the hair follicle, they always will come into play, that different medications will work differently, and also you will have a different kind of side effects. The message is that dihydrotestosterone, in case of your scalp hair, if it's too much, it decreases the growth phase of your hair and you start losing hair. But once all the treatment which we have, when we decrease the level of that hormone, that increases the function of that promotes the growth phase of the hair. Other hormones, I think that's a good place to test. Main hormone which I wanted you to know and understand was dihydrotestosterone, but other hormones. Now, estrogen, that promotes scalp hair. Progesterone, that will promote scalp hair. Then, if you have a high level of insulin, that needs to be understood, because about half of us are overweight or technically obese. That leads to high level of insulin. That leads to metabolic syndrome. And that leads to increased production of these hot dihydrotestosterone. And that, because we make more fat, we store more of this hormone, and there is active more conversion into this dihydrotestosterone level, and that decreases the growth. So when we get overweight, we are getting our body mass index is increasing, and we are getting more and more insulin resistance, we will start losing hair. Then there are certain medications which promotes they increase the level of this hormone, and that will also lead to hair loss. Other thing is prolactin. When the prolactin level goes up, that's a hormone which is needed for the breast milk. When the milk has to be extruded from the breast tissue, and that, if the hormone increases that level, that will also increase the level of DHT, and that will lead to hair loss. A lot of antipsychotic medication leads to a higher level of this DHT level through prolactin mechanism, and they lead to hair loss. So point here is, a lot of hormones come into play. Main hormone is dihydrotestosterone. This is what we don't want to forget. Our insulin goes up, that will lead to hair loss. If your estrogen or progesterone goes up, that will lead to increased growth phase, and your hair cell production will increase. So the female hormones actually are more conducive to producing more hair growth. That's why when the ladies go and get into menopause, the level of estrogen and progesterone goes down, and they technically, their physiology is changing, and the relative concentration of testosterone and DHT increases, they start developing hair loss, which, and then we'll discuss in a second, like how the hair follicles work and how this part happens. But technically, when the hormones, there is more male pattern hormone is happening, that is the time you will find you start losing hair. In case of male, we have a very classic way of how we start losing hair. First is the hairline start receding, then the middle part of your scalp will start losing hair. This part in the back part of your occipital region, those hair follicles technically are very resistant to effects of DHT, and when we get bald, we lose our hairline seed, we lost the hair on the top, and you will always have a flap of hair which is in the back, which is always there. That is because of the stem cells in those areas, they do not get affected that much. And when we do talk about treatments, that is the area we use to harvest more of cells from there to transplant in the areas which needs to be done. Then in the ladies, usually in the middle, their hair become very, hair becomes very sparse, and they become very thin, and then the bulk and the size and the color start decreasing. So male and female both have technically have the same kind, But the hairline seeding in female is very less prominent, but because they still have female hormones circulating in the body, even though to the lesser extent, but they do get in the middle thinning of the hair, and that's how their pattern of baldness or hair loss starts. Then what are the other things which affect hair growth? Remember I told you that there are blood vessels coming. The blood vessels are there for the nutrition, because these blood vessels bring nutrition, and hair follicles are interested in quality proteins, vitamins A, D, E, and then biotin. They are very much involved in your cell growth and helping with this one is. Further, the trace elements, iron, zinc, selenium, they all promote health. So that's where your nutrition comes into play. If you are watching your nutrition and you eat balanced diet, which is providing all this nutrients, you will not develop significant amount of baldness. Because some part, we are doomed to lose some hair because it's controlled by genetics and controlled by the stem cells in the hair follicles. Because if we start losing them genetically, we are pre-programmed to lose certain number of stem cells. And if we lose it, we will have some hair loss. But if we are maintaining proper hormonal balance and we are eating nutritious food, which is providing all these vitamins A, D, E, and then biotin, and then minerals, zinc, iron, selenium, then this will be less pronounced. In genetics, this is just a blueprint. Genetics is not that we are doomed to develop. In genetics, we are doomed to, it's a blueprint. If we give, let it unfold, it will unfold to the fullest. But if we change we provide all the nutrients, then it will express itself at a lesser extent. Next is so far we talked about hormones, nutrition, genetics, then mental and physical stress. That is something which we are going to take it up in a bulk. In primary care practices, most of the patients, when they come in, they come to us that they have major life-changing, some kind of a chronic medical problems, or they had significant emotional stress, and then they go through a phase, they are losing their hair significantly. And remember we discussed when we were talking about the stages of hair growth, there is a stage which is the resting period or the telogen. What happens is all these diseases, when the hair enter this resting phase, it, because of whether it's a physical stress or emotional stress, the cells stays in their resting phase and does not enter into new growth phase. And then that leads to the hair which is already there on your scalp, that after it goes to the resting phase, it has a life of about 3 months. After that, you're going to start losing it. So whenever you have a significant physical stress or emotional stress, which I said we will discuss in a minute in detail, because that is the kind of hair loss we see in medical practices. Most of the androgenic genetic hair loss and other kind of hair losses will, as a primary care physician, they will come to our practices and we will screen them. But most of the time, those will be seen in the specialized dermatology clinics. But this telogenic hair loss or the stress-induced hair loss, whether physical or emotional, we have a technical name to it. It's called telogenic, T-E-L-O-G-E-N, effluvium. EFFLUVIUM. That is the one where we are seeing, we have clumps of hairs which are coming and we are losing those hair. We will be seeing them in our medical clinics. Then certain conditions, which I have went over already, diabetics and certain, and when people have psychosis, they are taking those medications, they will do this part. Then if something goes wrong with your scalp, certain fungal infection, dermatitis, psoriasis, they all can lead to different harm, lead to the alteration in the pattern of your hair. Then when we're talking about medications, the one medication which is very important is the thyroid medications. Both if you have overacting thyroid or underacting thyroid, that can also affect this cell, the hair growth phase, whether it's a growth phase or resting phase or the shredding phase. It can affect it, and it can also affect your hair loss. So whether you have a overacting thyroid or underacting thyroid, you could expect thinning of the hair and this thing. And usually it gets restored when your thyroid hormone is made brought into a normal range. Further, there is people who need steroids on long-term basis. That will also technically will be like you induce insulin resistance. Then through the same mechanism which I just now talked, they will lead to significant hair loss. So it's very important to understand how different hormones and different places work out. So let's try to conceptualize before we get into new concept in this. Your scalp hair will grow for 2 to 7 years. Your eyelashes, body hair, and pubic hair and armpit hair, usually their life could be between 1 to 6 months. Most of the time, it is about 3 months. Now, there is one more concept which we need to understand. We need to talk about there are two kind of glands which are in the skin. One is the sweat glands and other is the sebaceous glands. Sebaceous glands basically are the one which these are glands right by the bulb. They open into hair bulb and they produce a secretions which we call sebum, which is primarily made up of triglycerides and some proteins. And those are used by your growing hair cell to stay in the growing phase. But if this sebum is produced too much, then when we are young, remember we start getting acne, that is the collection of this sebum. And that is also controlled by DHT, dihydrotestosterone level. The second gland which we have, which is the sweat gland. Sweat glands have nothing to do with they do not open anywhere in the, they are just opening into the hair cell. They are just lying in between the hair under your skin. And they are the one, they are designed to produce sweat in order to control our temperature. When we are in a warm environment or we have any kind of exertion, both mental or physical or psychological, we produce a lot of sweat. That sweat helps us to evaporate and transmit, cool us down to the temperature part of it. But there are certain glands which, if they are directly controlled by our autonomic nervous system. So we must understand the function of sweat glands, because we get a lot of questions whether the sweat glands has nothing to do with, I have a lot of patients, they will come, they said, I'm sweating a lot and I'm losing a lot of hair. They both are not related. Sweat glands has nothing to do with the structure of the hair. Next is the sebaceous glands. As with the sebaceous glands are, as I just went over, they produce the secretions which help the cells to stay in the hair follicle, and this they help you a lot with that part of it. Next is, now let's talk about hair loss, because so far the goal was to help you understand normal hair, starting from stem cell at the bottom of the hair follicle, It producing and growing, making root, coming out of your skin, that shaft, and then how long it lasts, what it takes for that stem cell to stay in a growth phase, where the different cells stay in different kinds of different duration of the growth phase. We covered that part. Now let's talk about hair loss. In medical practices, when we get patients, majority of my patients who come in, comes with the clumps of hair they bring. Sometimes they will put it in a Ziploc and bring it to us. They are basically, most of the time, they are after a major physical or major psychological disease. And that is temporary. It is not permanent. We will take that one in a detail in a second. Second kind of hair loss is that you develop certain patches of this thing. Like it looks like somebody pulled a bunch of hair and it leaves multiple bald patches. That is called alopecia areata. And that is an immune disease. And what happens is some immune mechanism starts and that kills the stem cells on those patches of hair. And then you have no hair growth and you develop bald places. Then there are certain people, psychological disorder, they just pull on their hair. They call alopecia, traction alopecia. That is very rare, but it is one of the known psychological mechanisms. When people are angry, they just pull on the hair and they lose a bunch of their hair. But most of us, which we have hair loss, which happens in 50s, we started with a receding hairline, then on the top of the head, and we are left with a patch in the back. That is called androgenic alopecia. Let's talk about that. Androgenic means, andro means male hormone, testosterone or dihydrotestosterone, and genetic means genetics. So this pattern, male type baldness or female type baldness or thinning, which happens as we age, that is determined by your androgens and also determined by your genetics. Our hair follicles, you will find that up till the age of 50, they work perfectly. But after that, you start developing more and more of this receding hairline and the male type partner, because your hair follicles, they have stem cells, and those stem cells, they are not getting back into regenerative phase or growth phase. And you start, and that is, some is genetically programmed, and then also how much is the androgen hormones which are floating around in your system, the genetics and androgen hormones, they will explain or they will become important how fast you will have this kind of alopecia. So the treatments which are genetics, we can change. We are trying to mess with that at certain places, but all the treatments for male type baldness or female type baldness, they are pretty much the treatments involved, getting involved with your androgen hormones. So we talked about alopecia areata, which is many times, 99% time, it is due to autoimmune diseases. Second time kind of hair loss, which we talked about, is androgenetic alopecia, which is the male type or female type hair loss. Then we talked about traction alopecia, if this thing. And then the medical hair loss, which is that telogen effluvium, that is very, very common. It's more common than what we think we have it. It's part of it is. Now, let's take male type baldness pattern. As we have already established, it depends on two things. One is genetics. Second is sensitivity of your stem cells to dihydrotestosterone. Any treatment, as we talked in the first, if your dihydrotestosterone level increases, it stops the growth phase or decreases the growth phase of your hair follicle, especially in this or in the scalp. So we all the treatment modalities, we need to lower the level of dihydrotestosterone. And if you are just had a major medical disease, like you are hospitalized, you had a surgery, or you have major stresses in your life, then when you start losing clumps of hair, that is telogen effluvium, or what is happening is due to this physical or emotional stress, your stem cells, they're stuck in their resting phase. They are not starting the new growth phase. So what happens is you go through a major medical problem, and then you start doing better, you start recovering, and then you suddenly find that you're losing clumps of hair. What has happened is all your hair growth has stopped, your hair follicles have entered into the resting phase, and they are not starting the recovery phase. Usually we're losing 50 to 100 cells every day. New hair follicles are taking over, new hairs are coming. If you look at the scalp, you will find not all the hair have the same length. Some are small, some are large, and they're different thing. That's why we could layer them. We create pattern in the hair styling and all those things. What we're doing there is because each cell in their growth phase where they are. In this condition, most of your stem cells, they are in the resting phase and they are not starting. They're in a delayed phase or prolonged recovery phase. As you recover, the cell hair follicles and the stem cell, they enter again into your growth phase, and then you start getting. So it's not a permanent change. So that's the one of the major thing which I wanted to say, like when our patients come in, they are extremely, extremely emotional. They're worried they are going to go bald. People who have this telogen effluvium, they do not go bald in 2 to 3 months. Because remember, this cell has a 90-day cycle when it starts. This one is you will lose a lot of hair, you will have a lot of thinning, but eventually you should expect that it will get better. But what you could do to help you through this recovery phase, you could make sure you eat properly. We provide all proper nutrients through high protein diet and all the minerals and vitamins you're doing. This one is. Then also certain medications like beta blocker, anticonvulsants, and then anything which is high in vitamin A. The vitamin A, you need it for the cell growth, but too much will lead to hair loss. Then you will find here is that if you go with what we should be doing it on a daily basis anyway, proper diet, proper sleep, proper exercise, resting both physically and mentally, this telogen effluvium will be a transitory thing, and you will not be stressed out, and you will be able to take care of this thing, part of it is. And now the question comes in, how common this telogen effluvium is? It is very common. I have seen every week people coming with, just for this problem, I see about 8 to 10 patients. And the bad part is there is no effective medication other than proper nutrition, rest, and reassuring. You reassure them and they keep on coming over and over, because they are worried they are going to go bald. But nobody will ever go bald with the telogen effluvium. So you just have to believe the natural history of that, but support your physiology during that time. Make sure you eat properly. You do what you are supposed to do, not only for the hair, because you could have this part of it. Now, we'll touch on this alopecia areata. That's something which where we remember it's the autoimmune process where the our own immune system kill those stem cells. It's very uncommon. Less than 2% of the people develop it, but it can happen. Now, the major part of our next part which we will discuss is the treatment options. So I think before we start on talking about the medications and different kind of modalities which we have for the hair loss, unless you have alopecia areata, which is physiological, which is an immunological disease, or you have a telogen effluvium, which is a physiological disease, most of us, which will be left with this androgenetic alopecia, like male type baldness, which starts in 50s, then it, as we get more and more older, it progresses. And we have a lot of people whose ego is pegged to that, and they come to us over and over to for treatment because they don't want to wear, they want the hair back today. So that's what will be the topic of discussion, will be what can we do. In this kind of baldness, whether it's a male type or a female type, the problem is what we have to work with. We have a stem cell which is not actively starting getting into the growth phase. That stem cell is fed by the blood vessels. Then we have DHT, or dihydrotestosterone, which is stopping this hair growth. So these are the target points which we could work on. A, blood vessels, how we could improve the blood and blood supply and the nutrients coming to it. That's one. Second target is what we could do to decrease these DHT levels. Third is that when we cannot handle this part, hair transplant and other treatment modalities which we do that part. So now let's start with at the level of blood vessels. What can we do to improve blood vessel to our scalp? Number one is proper nutrition. You need to have adequate nutrition in quality proteins, adequate amount of vitamins and trace elements. Because without nutrition, nothing is going to happen. You will find that the people who develop this kind of problem, they not only have this problem, they have high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, heart attack, stroke, cancer. So these are alopecia. At what rate is manifesting, it's also is a byproduct of how we live. So lifestyle change is the one of the biggest thing you could do to provide raw material or nutrition to your hair follicles. Because if you do that, you will be doing you a lot of service. Second, what are the other things you could do to improve the blood supply to this thing? Lot of treatment modalities which has been implicated. Number one is the massages. Lot of people believe, and though it has never been scientifically tested and proven, the scalp massages, they can technically, even though I'm, as a physician, I cannot, anything which I say as a treatment, it has to be properly studied and double-controlled placebo in the studies, double-blinded or placebo-controlled studies. But physiologically, it makes sense. Any kind of massages to the scalp should improve blood supply to the scalp and to the hair follicles. And I expect you're eating proper nutrition, and that will help to improve this part of it. Next comes in is your stem cells. How can you make these stem cells work? And that is where all the industry is built. Number one, these days, there is a lot of fad of PRP. Like these are the, is the PRP is a technique where what we do is they draw your blood, and they spin in a centrifuge machine, remove everything and keep the platelets and some serum which has some growth factors, and they inject into cell. And the theory here is that will provide stimulus or the growth factors for your natural stem cell. It is not a stem cell replacement therapy, but it will provide, the basis is that it will provide you with the nutrients or the stimulus or the growth factors for your own stem cells to work. This one is, it's very safe because it's your own platelets and own serum. Nobody is getting anything out. So the chances of complications are less, but the treatment, it depends on whom you talk to. If you look at the studies which are coming from dermatology literature, they swear by that. That is a bias which exists across the board in any kind of study. The people who do this thing as their livelihood and that's the only thing they do, they will overpromise it and they believe it's a panacea and it works. And scientifically, it's not been proven. What are the other things you could do to stimulate your stem cells is, one is the PRP. Then is the micro needling. It's like a small roller which has a multiple small micro needles. And when you move on top of the area which doesn't have blood, the key here is when you prick your skin at multiple times, you are stimulating the stem cells and getting into growth phase. This part of it is. There is some evidence that micro needling is helpful and it will work on this one part. But again, these are the techniques which have been tried many times but has never been significantly proven. Then there are products now, most of the specialized clinics are sending the growth factor, they are injecting the growth factors which they claim they are specialized, which will stimulate the stem cells in the scalp. People have been trying into that part of it. But the key for you to understand is they all are trying to stimulate your own stem cells. Then comes in is the hormone level, DHT level. And then one, before we get into hormone, there is a very common medication, there is a medication which is extensively used, it's called minoxidil. Minoxidil is a blood pressure medication. This one was, we used to use it a lot in the past, but now we have a lot more better and safer medication which work more predictably. But when we were using minoxidil, we were finding it out, not only is controlling your blood pressure, but your hair growth improved. And then they start looking back into that part of it. The way this minoxidil works is, it's a vasodilator. Vasodilator is any medication which goes and opens the caliber of your blood vessels. When the blood vessels improve, which we have been talking, anything which will open the blood vessel that will need to more blood flow to the hair follicle, and in turn your stem cell will have more nutrition, that will improve that part. Minoxidil then fell out of kind of favor as an antihypertensive medication, but it's used in hair loss is still proven. It is one of the two FDA-approved drugs. One is minoxidil, another is finasteride, which we're going to talk about that in a minute. These two medications are FDA approved. The way this works out is that when you take it, it vasodilates, more nutrients are delivered to your hair follicle and stem cell, and you feel good about that part. But what are the side effects? It is a vasodilator. If you're taken in an oral pill, and that's how we started originally, was it's a blood pressure medication. So it can, because it opens up the blood vessels, it opens up everywhere we want or we don't want. Most common side effect is a leg edema. Second is sometimes headache. And then also lowering of your blood pressure. But these medication, these side effects are very manageable and very, very small. The problem here is, remember, this is only trying to stimulate your own stem cell. Even say, for example, you took the medication and it start promoting your stem cell to start working. This stem cell is going to take, when it start working, it's going to go through different phases, which we talked about in the beginning. it's going to take 3 to 6 months to see anything, any action happening. When people using this medication, they don't see it very quickly. And when they don't see the response quickly, they just quit. And that's where this whole fallacy lies. These medications are not to be taken just for 1 month, 2 months. These are lifelong lifestyle medications. And if you are going to commit to this one of these medications, you are committing to lifelong treatment. So that's one of the main pitfall with the treatment with the hair loss is people tend to just write it off very quickly. Further, this minoxidil now these days is available in the shampoo or the cream and the ointment preparation. Because we don't need it to take oral and have all the side effects. If we could apply in the on our scalp and it will improve the circulation only in the scalp, we will have less side effects. But the key here is we have to take for a long time. It comes in different preparations, strengths, and your dermatologist or your primary care who specializes in this one will help you to pick the appropriate formulation, strength, so that you could use it the way you want to do that. Next class of medication which is approved for hair loss is your finasteride. Finasteride is a medication when your testosterone is getting converted into dihydrotestosterone, there is a step or enzyme. This finasteride or dunasteride, they both go and stop that conversion. So there is less of DHT available and your stem cell can enter into a growth phase. Again, same problem. This hair growing at a 0.5 inch every month. This is not a one-day treatment. This is a lifelong commitment. So when you're taking this medication, you have to commit it for a long time. And even in very, very small doses, like 0.25 milligram up to 1 or 2 milligram people have used in different conditions, they are very helpful. Again, not only, see, this is the hormone now, if you look at it, is stopping the conversion of testosterone to DHT. So the side effects will be, people will have complained that they have less libido. Some people complain they have a problem with the orgasm. Some people have problem with erections. So like any other treatment, nothing is free. But this side effects are very, very minute. If you look at the internet, it is full of wrong information where there are videos after videos and articles after article. They pick one thing out of proportion and they will kind of vilify this medication that if you take that, you may have a hair and you will not be having your sexual life will be destroyed. That has never been ever been accomplished. This medication, again, comes in multiple strengths. It comes in multiple formulations. Now, let's talk about that you have, so far what we try to build is how the normal hair growth for this thing is, what are the physiological reasons are, what is the genetic reasons are, what's the androgenic reasons are, what's the immunological reasons are. Now, say you have this hair loss. So what you should do as a patient? I think they treat like any other disease, you should start with your primary care physician. When you go to your primary care physician after your detailed history and physical, then they will kind of determine whether you have androgenetic alopecia or you have alopecia areata or you have a telogenic effluvium or anything else. So they will guide you to this one part. If it is just a physiological condition for a short period of time, they will guide you, they will support you, and then you will be able to take care of yourself. But for these other cases, they will refer you to alopecia specialist. Most of the dermatologists, they are very proficient with that, but they will help you with this part. Then one common theme happens is, like as I said, these medications, whether it's you're taking minoxidil or you're using microneedling, PRP, all those things, nothing is a quick fix. And people who are very much, they're emotionally, they're so upheaval. And then they are the one usually go for altogether different kind of treatment, which is the hair transplant. In a hair transplant, what we do is we take the hair follicles or the stem cells from the back part of the hair, which is resistant to genetically to go through this hair loss that much. So what you do is they take the hair follicle and then they replace over there. And then you improve your nutrition, they add PRP with it. All those things to make sure whatever they have taken from here, transplanted in the areas where this thing happens, and you provide proper nutrition, proper support system, proper follow-up, you will start, and your patient, your hair will start growing, and you will have a full good hair, and there your ego will be restored. But what happens here, there is, those are the people, they usually tend to make more mistakes. Because once you get psyched up about some kind of treatment and you are not willing to wait, and that's where I just wanted to talk about patient expectation. I find many times the patients have gone to beautiful centers and their surgery is done excellent. I expected them that they will have a full proper hair growth with time, but they don't want to wait. They just start doing things which they are not supposed to do that. I wish these transplant centers, they do a better job explaining the patients about what to expect, what rate the recovery should be expected. And this whole talk, which we have the live session, which we had today, this podcast was dedicated to one of my patients who had altogether different expectations. And here I'm a primary care physician and I'm telling him all those things. And he was looking at me, no, that's not what I expected. And he had a very difficult time understanding it, that yes, you may not like it, but that's what is going to be. Then the other quickest tip is, if you don't want to wait for the medication to work, you don't want hair transplant, then hair patches, they work beautifully. You go to hair patch specialist and whatever style you want to, what they do is they put a patch, they prepare your scalp, add some adhesive, you put a hair patch and you're ready to go. And but again, even whether it's a transplant or a patch, you have to go to those specialty clinics and you need to continue to go there and continue to get the treatment. Then in case of females, there in addition to minoxidil, finasteride, there are some anti-androgenic herbs like spironolactone and a few other medications which are tried with success. Point here is, if we want to kind of, we're going to go in a minute about all the frequently asked questions, which my office kind of put together a list of all the questions which we had, which have been asked this whole week. We're going to take up all the questions, and that if something which I have not covered so far, that will be covered. But if we want to have a holistic picture, let's summarize. Here, what you see is shaft, which gets into the skin is the root. Then the root rests in the kind of a flask-shaped structure we call hair bulb. Inside is the hair follicle. Below each hair follicle is a stem cell which is supplied with the blood vessels. So if you want to have a good hair, the rate at which these hair follicles will grow and how long they will grow, some part is genetic, a lot of part is androgen stimulus. But if you have proper lifestyle, where you eat properly, you have proper nutrition, you will find that your hair, male type baldness or female type baldness, will happen at a less at a very late age, where hopefully by that time you have accepted the things the way they are, and this is not is that much emotional upheaval. But there are medical treatments, there are transplant, patch, PRP, microneedling, all those things. I think it will be not complete if we don't talk about the myths about hair loss. First of all, we are not doomed genetically that we are going to become bald. The rate at which we lose hair or we develop this baldness is determined by our lifestyle. Again, quality nutrition, primarily plant-based, lean, good quality protein, healthy fats, which are rich in vitamins and minerals, food which is high in nuts, legumes, fruits and vegetables, balanced diet, is your best option to treat or prevent baldness or hair loss naturally. Nutrition supplements. This is a $1 billion industry. Till today, there is no placebo-controlled, double-blinded study which has ever proven that taking these supplements either delays or prevent hair loss. So next is, let's take the frequently asked questions which my team has put in together. First question was, what is PRP and how this works? PRP is, we draw your blood, we spin it through centrifuge. Whenever we spin your blood, your cell, it gets chained into your platelets and some serum is taken, which is your own. So it's not foreign to your body. It's injected into bald spaces. And the whole idea there is to provide you with nutrition, not the stem cells, for the growth factors for your stem cells. It is tried a lot. A lot of people are getting it. The evidence so far is iffy. Nobody has been able to produce in clinical studies that it is effective. Second, what is the role of creatine in hair loss? And this is very common. I go to gym every day, 6 to 7, and this question is asked many times. We have people who are very enthusiastic. They just in order to build muscle, they will take anything. They are taking creatine supplements. These creatine supplements are precursor for DHT, and they are losing hair. And when you have to tell them that it could be possible mechanism, that's why they are doing it, they usually don't like it. They become a little saddened, and they will ask for a second opinion. But creatine definitely can lead to hair loss. Then one of my Indian friends asked me role of salt palmetto, because I go visit India every year, 4 times a year, to see my dad. And I was been called to bring salt palmetto from here in the United States. And there is no data. When I tried to explain, they thought that probably I'm trying to do dilly-dally, that I don't want to bring it. I was trying to act as a physician, but there is no proven ever role of salt palmetto in prevention of hair loss or delaying hair loss. Then hair loss in women, that is a major issue, because nothing provokes more emotional response in case of female when they start losing hair. Unless you have alopecia areata, most of the times when the females come to me panicking about significant amount of hair loss, especially after some physiological, both physical stress or psychological stress or hospitalization, or they have some kind of major surgery, it is telogen effluvium. This will pass. I have to reassure them. Now we have even kind of developed a protocol in the office. Once we know that they are, we support them through talking to them, encouraging them with proper nutrition, and helping them that they should do everything to improve this part. Next question which I had was, is there any supplements ladies should take? As I have just now explained, there is no specific supplement which is shown to be very effective just for preventing hair loss or reducing hair loss. Proper nutrition, which should include all the vitamins and minerals, should be taken properly. But nothing has ever been shown that one specific type of supplement you should do that part. It will be so far based on the data, it is a wastage of money. The next question which my team has asked is, how we can slow the hair loss? If some patient comes in, they understand that hair loss is going to happen with the time and age. But what are the things, what are the lifestyle changes they could develop which will help them to control hair loss? First will be proper nutrition. It comes over and over again. Nutrition, which is primarily plant-based, with quality meat and good quality fats, high in nuts, which will provide you with all minerals and vitamins, and legumes, fruits and vegetables, balanced part of it. If you have a balanced package with which will help you with everything which is going on, you will enjoy your hair for a long time, and you could override your genetics, you could override your androgenic system. Now, next question was, how can we cure hair loss? That is a loaded question. I think the answer is in the whole discussion so far we are having. Again, I would say we should start with proper nutrition. Then, whether you're taking minoxidil treatment or finasteride treatment or hair transplant, microneedling, PRP, all these things have a role. But there is not a one medication which I could recommend which you take and you will be cured. Because that is something which is very, very important to understand, that this hair loss issue is lifelong. And it will be a problem for you till you have ego packed there. If you value that, then you will need to be on some kind of treatment rest of your life. Next question was, one of our chemotherapy patients asked us was, what is scalp cooling? This is a new concept. Remember I told you, for the hair, they have blood vessels which provide nutrition and they help you to grow the cell. Let's do the reverse. Say for example, you have unfortunately some kind of a cancer treatment, and if we put you in a kind of a helmet shape structure and we cool your scalp, what will happen? Your blood vessel will go into vasoconstriction. While you're getting chemotherapy, the chemotherapy concentration which is coming to your scalp will decrease, and that's the concept which we are trying to use. By scalp cooling, we do that part, and then the chemotherapy is not delivered to your hair follicles, in turn your stem cells, and you will have very little hair loss after your chemotherapy treatment. Believe me, this was very enlightening to me personally. I had a patient last week. She is getting chemotherapy in one of our tertiary care centers in Mapili Center, and they do this scalp cooling as a part of the protocol. And she had full hair, and it was beautiful. Because, you know, as a physician, we have biases. I knew that she's going chemotherapy, but she came to my office without any wig, without any hairband. So I thought that she may be wearing wig. Then I called her, and she explained to me that her oncologist is very sensitive to how she feels, and he has offered her, and she accepted it, and she is having very little side effects. So that is beautiful. We are using physiology in our cancer treatment, and it was very helpful. Then next question was, actually that also came from our patient whom we had a long discussion last week regarding hair this thing. What happened is he got hair transplant and suddenly he lost all the hair. And here is somebody who is very sensitive to his looks. He runs a very big enterprise, and apparently it's important for him how he looks. And suddenly he lost this one. That is a condition called shock hair loss. What happens is once they are transplanting hair, not only they have to remember, they have to pick hair, they have to go into dermis and implant it there. There are other stem cells or the hair follicles. They got this injured, destroyed. And certainly they also, for a short period of time before they can start the new growth phase, they go into resting phase and you lose bunch of hair. And that is called, an entity is called shock hair loss. And that is a very common after transplant. And that was also, I wish the transplant surgeon or the dermatologist should have done a better job explaining him. Because A, if you prepare them, they are not emotionally charged. Second is that if you tell them what they need to do, what basically is how much shock hair loss happens, it depends on the expertise of the surgeon. If you have a rough surgeon, there will be more damage to your scalp. But if you have paying for the best surgeon, they will do it precisely and you could prevent shock hair loss. Also, it will depend is provide proper nutrition. And this is the place I think PRP has a role. You're putting new hair, and if you do PRP and provide all the growth factors and other stuff for these hair cells to get transplanted there and get to this thing, they help. And then certain patients can be started on minoxidil and finasteride before even doing the transplant, so that they are prepared that this they're due to trauma, shock hair loss doesn't happen. It is amazing how emotionally charged a patient could be. And I request our colleagues to do a better job in explaining about that part, because it definitely kind of emotionally ruins them. Then the next part comes in is, how do we kind of grossly at home decide whether I'm having alopecia areata or am I having a physiological part? I think you shouldn't make, as a patient, you should not make this call. You should talk to your, at least your primary care physician, and let them examine you, look at this part of it is, and do help part of this part. I don't expect, or I don't want you to make judgment yourself. Then there was a question which came in is, to what are the complications of hair transplant? I'm taking these questions as I was given the list and as they are coming on online. Hair transplant complications are the one that's the most feared, which I just now talked about, the shock hair loss. But remember, in this case, the hair are taken from one place, they are put into different part. There is a micro trauma. Whenever there is a trauma, you could have infection. You could have inflammation. But primarily, by and large, it is a very safe procedure. And the surgeons who do it, they are very, very tuned to that part of it. And they do a very good job in kind of they are very good with their hands. So the infectious complication, bleeding complications, they can technically happen, but they are very rare, and the infection part is very rare. So, and one more question, just now coming online. What are the vitamin deficiencies which can lead to hair loss? As I've been repeating over, all vitamins, fat-soluble vitamin A, D, E, and water-soluble biotin, they all have been linked with hair loss if they run deficient. There is no studies which we have that once we replace it, that your hair loss stops. At least I could not find it at this one part, the studies pertaining to that. And I will continue to literature search, and if I find something, I will answer this question very specifically to this person. But these are the vitamins which are helpful, and they help us to control the proper nutrition, the stem cell, and continue to improve the function of that. Next question coming is, to me, to summarize all the hormones which are involved in hair loss. We could divide this one into the hormones which lead to hair loss and also the hormones which prevent hair loss. Doing the hormones which lead to like the prevention of hair loss is estrogen and progesterone. That's very easy to understand and easy to do that part. Rest of the hormones, whether DHT, testosterone replacement, if you are on a testosterone replacement, it is going to get converted more to DHT and you will lose hair loss. Then insulin resistant and high insulin level, then prolactin level, growth hormone, all these hormones will lead to hair loss. Next question is there any specific diet for preventing hair loss? There is no specific diet, as I said. You need to stick to balanced diet. And balanced, we are tore up whether the plant-based diet is better or the animal diet is better. And I think like anything else in life, truth lies in the middle. I think they both the extremes. My research doesn't support that. My research is if you do a balanced diet, you will do better. Balanced diet is predominantly proteins, quality protein, healthy fats, nuts in smaller quantities so that they could provide you with all the vitamins, minerals, and trace elements. And proper hydration, proper sleep, stress management, which is a common theme for no matter which chronic disease you pick, you will find this message is over and over and there this one is. So I think there is no more questions which I'm getting. As far as I'm concerned, we have went through in detail about cell growth, different phases of cell growth, stem cell, follicle, nutrition, blood vessel, different medications, hair transplant, complications of hair transplant, hair patch. If there is any other question which comes in, please, we will post this video and please comment it and we will answer those questions. Thank you very much for joining and giving us time to learn with us on this topic. Please do not forget to subscribe to our channel. And we request you share this video on the social media, and that will help us to remain motivated and continue to produce and do the live sessions and podcasts. Thank you very much.